welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Nick Keezer, intern Nick, Ladarius Robinson here with you as well on this Monday morning. We got a full house on the program here today. Michelle Knezovic is off again today. She'll be back coming up tomorrow in reaction to Game 4 tonight between the Preds and the Colorado Avalanche. We are live at Pete and Terry's today out here at Bridgestone Arena. Looking forward to Game 4 coming up tonight between the Preds and the Avalanche. Puck drop at 8:30 tonight. Pre-game at 7:30. I'll have a special live edition of Preds Insiders coming up from 6 to 7:30 tonight from the arena as well. So looking forward to that. Joe Rexroad, what's going on? How are we doing?
90 minutes, huh? 90 minutes of Preds Insiders.
As if people don't get enough of me on the air every day, we'll have an extra 90 minutes today.
That's an extra 50% of show by my math.
Yes, it is.
I like it. it's is this our first time back here, by the way, doing a show since I destroyed a chair?
That is correct. Okay. We have returned from to the scene of the crime today. Rex Road is in the same seat, although it's a different chair, obviously.
It's sturdy.
I feel good about your chances to make it through today.
It feels very sturdy. Chase McCabe tried to kill me once, but it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, and if he does it as the boss now, like we can get, you know, workman's comp, we can get after him a little bit.
Now he might actually be able to do it and get away with it. You know?
Well, he might, actually. obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time today looking ahead to Preds and Avalanche. This is a tough hole for the Predators to be in, down 0-3 in this series. First time in the history of their franchise that they're down 0-3. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. I do want to start with some news from yesterday, Joe. It looks like Ja Morant not going to be available for Game 4 in the series for the Grizzlies against the Warriors. They lose Game 3, so they're down 2-1 in that series. And, you know, if Ja Morant can't go in Game 4, that's going to be a pretty big uphill climb for the Grizzlies at that point.
It's really awful because that series – I mean, granted, that game in particular was not a good game. They were getting blown out before he got hurt. But, yeah, I still – looked at Game 4, like, you know how it goes in these series sometimes. Sometimes the home team will get one, will blow a team out, but then you know Game 4 is going to be different. And I will say this, the Grizzlies have been incredible this year without Ja Morant. I mean, it's actually one of the most surprising. I mean, Jeff Van Gundy the other day said, I think the biggest storyline in the NBA this year is how the Grizzlies played without Ja Morant. It's why they're where the in the position they are, because he missed a lot of time with the knee. But it would be awful, and it looks like he's listed officially as doubtful. He's probably not going to play, and then who knows beyond that, which would be too bad because this series, especially in the first two games, lived up to it. And we're going to get to this later, but I got to ask you, the Jordan Poole pull of the knee.
Well, Grizzlies fans are upset about it. Taylor Jenkins is borderline irate about it, that nothing's been done. I mean, to me, I'm no doctor, but it didn't really look that vicious to me. Like, I don't know whether or not Jordan Poole was intentionally grabbing his knee. I mean, he wasn't really close to the ball. I don't know if he was intentionally grabbing his knee. But, like, you got to have some pretty diabolical nature in you to think that that grab of the knee is going to take him out of Game 4. That's just the way I view it.
I mean,
I don't know.
I think I'm, like, losing my mind with some of this commentary on this. Seriously. Like, I got to save some of this for 7:45.
Say, could this be a look ahead to 7:45?
I mean, dude. So I think one problem with sports in general is if you watch any play just in slow motion, you think the play happened like that. Oh, and here's his knee, and I'll grab. Watch
and
the
while
play.
While the hand is moving, he is mentally just calculating, if I twist here, it.
This is my chance to tear his ligament. Watch the play in normal time. You know, the ball's right there. He swipes at it. The ball goes over here. He swipes it, he grabs it, and he gets – I mean, come on. I'm sorry, but come on with this. But there's a lot to that whole thing. And look, I think the core of this is, you know, I get why the Grizzlies and Grizzlies fans would be upset with Steve Kerr's broke the code quote.
Yes.
Because, you know, that was a bad play by Dylan Brooks, a dirty play. I don't think he meant to hurt him. He meant to – I mean, again, it's like when you're doing that when you're Dylan Brooks, are you thinking, ooh, if he falls just so, he'll crack his elbow?
Yeah.
Of course not. I mean, you're in the moment. He shouldn't have clubbed him in the head. It was a bad play. Kerr was angry. He lost, you know, Gary Payton. Gary Payton's been a great story, and he comes back. So he says broke the code. So they're mad about that. But, like, let's step back here.
Ja Morant did tweet after. Said, broke the code.
Yes, he did. He deleted it quickly.
He did.
But he did quit.
He went all A.J. Brown on us.
Yeah.
Just leave it up there, man. It's all good. So we'll see what happens on that front. Obviously, if John Morant can't go, that's going to be tough for the Grizzlies. But as you said, they've played well without John Morant this year. I don't know that playing well in the regular season, and as Teresa Walker has pointed out to me before, against competition in the regular season, it wasn't all that great when John Morant was out. It's a little bit different than Golden State on the road in the playoff game. So,
yeah,
we'll see how they respond to that.
They couldn't do anything defensively the other night against Golden State, which was concerning. But it was also one of those nights where they were just scorching hot from the field.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't necessarily have that every night. So it's going to be interesting. But I think – you know, it's going to be tough to not be down 3-1 going back to Memphis.
So, speaking of tough, the Nashville Predators in a tough spot right now. They're down 0-3 in their series against Colorado. Came back home for Game 3 on Saturday. And, Joe, I thought, for the most part, 5-on-5, especially to start the game, it was way better than it was in Game 1 and 2. They really dictated the play a lot in the first period. Problem was, every time you put them on the power play on Saturday, that was ending up in the back of your net, and that was the story of the game. The Avalanche win 7-3 on Saturday. They did tally an empty net goal at the end of that to make it 7-3, but all of a sudden, if you're the Predators, you're down 0-3 for the first time in the history of your franchise. You'll try to avoid being swept tonight for the first time in the history of your franchise, and quite frankly, Joe, it was a better effort for the Predators, and I think they laid it all on the line on Saturday, but it's pretty obvious they do not match up with the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, look, it's too bad because when Yossi scored, you know, to tie it up, I mean, at that point, you know, I thought they really had momentum on their side. I thought the building was the best it had been. It was all day. And, again, the building was good. It just wasn't, I think, what we're used to seeing in the postseason. But it was good. It was rocking, and they were playing well. And then you make a little bit of a mistake, give up that goal. We had a lot of discussion about this, and I know we can get more into this later too. I don't begrudge John Hines trying to challenge that play. I thought it wasn't. You thought it was. Other, you know, Kaharski on TNT thought it was for sure. It's insane. I think you tweeted like,
well,
how could a rule be this hard to understand or to predict? Well, like, it's got to be the most difficult rule to understand and predict in sports.
Well, and this is not just this series. I mean, there's been, I think, three examples now in this series of goaltender interference. This is all over the playoffs. Nobody has any clue what it is. I mean, you know, you and I were arguing back and forth on Twitter about the New York-Pittsburgh one in Game 1.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody has any clue. Gretzky agrees with you, and, like, the entire rest of the panel agreed with me on TNT. I was like, nobody has any idea what this rule is. I mean, I thought in the instance on Saturday, it's 4-3 at that time with that goal going in. If you challenge it, you get it right, you've just tied the game up. So the momentum was still on your side there. If you challenge it, get it right, it's still a 3-3 hockey game, and you're feeling good about yourself. I mean, to me, I know that Ingram was on the edge, so it was right on the edge of the blue paint. But, I mean, the guy skates on his pad, and he's chopping down on the glove. Like, I don't know what else you really need to see. And yet they come back, they review it. Didn't review it that long. And like, all right, good goal on the ice. So nobody has any idea.
Well, part of their explanation was Granlund pushed him into him.
Yeah.
But
he got there first. I mean, I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, again, yeah. The bottom line with that, though, is I don't blame Hines for challenging that. And I understand, wow, man, they're scoring every time they're on the power play. Well, you have to at some point rely on your penalty kill to, like, do something
in
a particular game, right?
It is an option to kill the penalty.
Like, you actually do, like, if you want to go by math, you do kill way more penalties than you allow goals, right?
So, most of the time, yes.
If you're going by the math of, like, all time and the history of the sport and in your season and whatever, then you think you probably might get a kill here or there. So, you know, it's this idea of, you know, they've been scoring, you can't possibly go on the kill. Well, you know, no, I disagree. That's a huge goal. It changed the momentum of the game. And then, of course, we saw what happened. The kill did not get it done, and it turns out that they give up a touchdown again in a second out of three games.
Well, and, you know, Connor Ingram was so good in Game 2, and really, I mean, almost an out-of-body experience how good he was in Game 2. And, you know, I'm not going to say that it was his fault on Saturday, but that sixth one that goes in, it's a rough one. Like, you want to have that back. And as soon as that goes in, the game's over.
Fifth one was the misplay behind us.
Yes.
Which I know Ekholm kind of hit him a little bit, but the bottom line is that's a critical mistake. So he didn't have a good day. But most of it was the man advantage, and most of this series is the Colorado Avalanche are really freaking good.
They're really freaking good, and they are taking advantage of this matchup against the Predators. One thing that continues to stand out to me, and it was the case again on Saturday, the Predators trying to clear the puck out of the zone are having some trouble doing it. Carrier on Saturday, he tried to clear one, and Makar knocked it down at the blue line. And then there was another place where he just teed one up right for MacKinnon, going right up the middle, and keeps the puck alive, and it leads to a goal. Like, those are it sounds so simple, but those are the mistakes that you can't make in this series against that team, and they'll make you pay every time, and so far they have every time, the Colorado Avalanche. So down 0-3 tonight, heading into Game 4, the Preds will try to stave off elimination, and we'll see whether or not they can force a Game 5 coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. We will take your thoughts all show long on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll continue that discussion next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Preds down 0-3. They'll try to hold off elimination tonight as they take on the Colorado Avalanche at Bridgestone Arena coming up in Game 4. Let's go to the text line. Will in Bellevue texting in says, Robbie, how much blame falls on John Hines and his system for the Preds' inept play and failure since early April? Instead of the team that's hard to play against, we have a team that's hard to watch. Not good. Coming from Will from Bellevue on the text line. Joe, to Will's point there, this has not been a very impressive close to the season for the Predators in terms of not just the playoff series, but the last really month of the regular season wasn't very good. It was up and down. And now you find yourself in an 0-3 hole in the playoffs with, you know, a possible sweep coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. We've heard this thrown around, and you and Jared talked about it last week on Jared versus Joe. What do you make of the idea of the system? Number one, in terms of maybe fatigue setting in for the Predators, but number two, is it the system to blame for what we've seen coming down the stretch here, where guys in some instances have gone cold, where other teams seem to be kind of matching the intensity and the physicality that the Predators bring to the table? What do you make of what we're seeing out there with John Hines, his system, and the way the Predators have responded over the last month?
You know, I can't dismiss that and a lot of other possible factors here. I mean, there's no doubt. We can all agree that they've faded and they've not been as good and that really like the quality of their game on a consistent basis. See, the problem with muting myself and then like coughing is that like your mic is right there
it's
next
right
to me
here.
It didn't really work, did it? Okay, sorry, I had to clear my throat. So you know, we can all agree that things have gone downhill, right? I mean, if you go watch games from the first couple months to 3 months of the season versus now, it's different. But then I think about that, and I think about teams that make runs just in, like, the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? And because, you know, for the most part, in this postseason, that style, that, if you want to call it system, I mean, that's very apparent, okay? It is a grueling, brutally physical game night after night. And so you think about 2 months of a team tacked on to 82 games going all the way to the end. And they get through it. So I'm not saying there's nothing to that, but I wouldn't overemphasize that. I mean, I think there's a lot to this. Now, look, with Saros, that's also kind of a separate thing. Was Saros overworked this year? You know, I mean, it's the first time that he had anywhere near that kind of workload, possibly. Yeah. I also don't think that it's fair to look at that and say, I mean, he had a weird injury. He had an awkward situation with his leg.
And his injury had nothing to do with fatigue.
That's not a
fatigue.
And I know that's
been thrown out there on Preds Twitter. His injury has nothing to do with that.
That sounds more like a Preds Facebook post.
Yeah,
that's a Preds Twitter?
Yeah, it's Preds Twitter.
I don't know. What do you think about that? I don't want to just dismiss it out of hand, you know, because I think that they do play probably a more demanding nightly style when they're so focused on out-physicaling their opponent. But I think it's maybe a little overblown here.
Well, I think it's a little overblown. Now, I think there could be something to the Predators, the way they play, the way that John Hines wants them to play. It requires a certain level of effort and a certain level of intensity, and that maybe other teams, especially other top teams, don't exactly have that on display all year long. And then when playoffs come around, they do, and there's a difference. I think I buy that a little bit. Like, I think it's become pretty obvious that the last 3-4 weeks of the regular season, Colorado had zero interest in those games, and they were just biding their time to the playoffs. And now that the playoffs are here, they're healthy, and they are kicking people around, kicking the Predators around specifically. I mean, their top guys have been unbelievable. Really, their whole team has been unbelievable. So I think there's something to that. So maybe it's a case where if you're taking on the Avalanche, you know, in mid-January, do they have the same intensity level that they're bringing to that game that you do? I don't know. You know, the games against the Avalanche in the regular season were so weird because COVID was a part of it. You know, they got hammered one time up there in Denver and lost that game. I think it was 6-2. Other than that, Predators pretty much handled the Avalanche in the regular season. So, obviously, there's a difference between that and what we're seeing right now in the playoffs because, quite frankly, for the most part in this series, it hasn't really looked like the Predators belong on the same ice as Colorado. And I knew that there would be a difference come playoff time. The difference has been even greater than I thought it would be. And I wonder how much of that is the Avalanche, and I think it's a lot. And how much of that is the Predator system maybe being fatigued? Obviously, people are going to point to Saros being out. Do I think he makes a difference in this series? Yeah, like I think game one's probably a little closer. I think game three's probably a little closer. But I still think they're probably down 0-3 if you see Saros is in net. I know some people disagree with that. I would have loved to have seen it if Saros was in net. But the way the Colorado Avalanche team that I've seen at 5-on-5, I think the Predators are still down 0-3 in this series.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could buy, like, maybe Saros can steal you a game, you know, that you're not going to get otherwise. But, again, I mean
Connor Ingram, you can't play much better than he played in game two.
Right. Like, that's the thing. Ingram's performance in game two is Saros, you know, I guess maybe you could say Saros only gives up one instead of the two, you know, in however many minutes of hockey. But, I think that's I just wouldn't look too much at that as a big thing. You know, as far as the Hines thing, so Keith says on the text line, did we not praise him all year for getting the top players to buy into his system? Well, yeah. He did, and they did. But, see, I think you mentioned, and I think that comment and what you just mentioned is really what it comes down to here. The Avs' top players are top players in the NHL. Now, I will say that for the Preds, Matt Duchene has, again, stepped up in this series, and Matt Duchene has been that guy. But we've seen this before in the postseason. Like, their top forwards still aren't elite level in the league. And sometimes when you play a team like this, it really comes through. It's really obvious.
Well, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Philip Forsberg's been borderline invisible in this series. And, you know, I do think he was better in game three, and he had a couple of looks there. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that has not found his way onto the score sheet through three games. And if the Predators were going to have any chance in this series – that can't happen. I mean, Duchene's got three goals. You know, I still don't think, you know, I think Duchene's been very opportunistic.
Yeah.
I don't watch the game and think to myself, ooh, Matt Duchene's out there taking over. Like, I think he's been very opportunistic with the shots.
But,
hey, that's
goals.
What you got to do. I mean, yeah.
Like the first goal the other day, he hadn't done much, and then boom, it's like this. Hey, you finish. I mean, that is still valuable.
Yeah, no question about it. And we've just not seen that from Forsberg. So, you know, I put Johansson on that list too. Now, I have a little bit more sympathy for Johansson because up until the other day, I mean, to me, you're playing with two anchors next to you on the top six. We've talked so much about that I'm almost blue in the face talking about the top six at this point. But we did see them change that up the other day. I mean, you had Janot finally moving up from the Hurd line to Johansson's line with Forsberg. You know, Granlund and Duchene stayed together. And they had Cunning in the top six, which I know – has generated a lot of reaction from Predators fans, but they did shift the lineup around in Game 3. And I will say, like we said to start off the show, I thought 5-on-5, they were much better in Game 3 than they were in Games 1 and 2.
No doubt.
Can they carry that forward and, you know, maybe kill off some penalties tonight in Game 4?
Maybe take fewer.
Well,
would be another idea. So the Hines thing, I guess I'm not surprised. What do you look at when things go poor? You look at your coach, look at your GM. So Jacob in Nashville says, John Hines, after us giving up 16 goals the past three games, acts like we've just lost a January game. Not saying he needs to go scorch earth, but it's like he doesn't even care. We're about to get swept. So Alex Doherty, after the press conference, some of us noticed he's just very even keel, but that's who he is, right?
That's who he is. I would also say, what John Hines says to us and what John Hines says behind the scenes are probably two different things at times.
Sure.
Now, and let's be honest here, he's never going to come out and say this, but I think there's also probably some looking in the mirror and recognizing what you're up against too. I mean, you're taking on the best team in the Western Conference, maybe the best team in the NHL, and it's shown throughout this series. Now, John Hines is never going to stand up at the podium, and I'm not saying that he thinks they have no chance to win, because I'm sure that they're competitive just as much as the next guy. I believe Roman Josi when he says that they believe that they have what it takes to come back and do it, because your high level athletes get to this point by just rolling over.
Yeah, you better think that way.
Yeah, you better think that way. But I mean, let's just call it what it is so far. It has been total domination for the most part from Colorado through three games of this series, and that has to, as a coach, it's not like he doesn't see that out there on the ice.
Yeah. Look, I feel like if things are going poorly, so I think about his press conference afterwards. Again, it didn't even really strike me as much, because it's just, he's very even keel, and very much focused. To me, he is so process focused that that's what he talks about for the game. The result, I'm not saying the result is secondary, but it's did the team play well or did the team not play well? That's the conversation after every game. But it's interesting because, you think about, for example, Mike Vrabel after, a loss. He's the opposite, right? Yeah. He's very emotional. He'll lash out at people and things like that. And then people get mad at him for that. So, ultimately, if your coach loses, you may be mad at your coach, however they take it. Maybe they just shouldn't do pressers anymore.
Yeah. Maybe so. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. What has this series taught us about the Predators and how they stand currently in the Western Conference, moving forward as well into next year? We'll get to that coming up on the other side. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from Pete and Terry's Tavern down here at Bridgestone Arena in advance of Game 4 coming up tonight between the Preds and the Colorado Avalanche. Taking your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, you're down 0-3 heading into this game tonight, and I tweeted this out Saturday night. I'm not saying the Preds can't win tonight, because they could absolutely win tonight and force a Game 5, but it's difficult for me to see it going much past Game 5. For all intents and purposes, this series is over. I mean, let's just call it what it is. The Avalanche are so good. You're down 0-3. The idea of winning four in a row against that team seems like virtually an impossibility at this point. So with that in mind, I had this thought on Saturday as I'm leaving the game. How do people view this team? How do people view the direction that this team is heading right now? Because I think there's a bunch of different ways to look at it that I think can make it really complicated. And I was talking to Steve Lehman about this last night on News Channel 5 as we were kind of taping something for them last night. And he pointed out, every year since he's been here, and Steve goes back, I think, to 2011 since he's been here, once the season's over and once the playoff series is over, you kind of feel like you have an idea of where the team is and what direction they're heading. In 2017, obviously, that speaks for itself. 2018, you're disappointed by Winnipeg. In 2019, it kind of felt like the window, so to speak, was closing at that point. Right now, if this season ends tonight and they get swept by Colorado, how do you view this team? Because I think in a lot of ways, this team overachieved this year. I know, just speaking for me personally, I had them finishing seventh in the Central Division, and that was a pretty popular pick. A lot of people picked them to finish seventh. Some people had them sixth. Ultimately, they ended up finishing in fifth in the Central Division and got the second wild card spot, which, again, to think about, you know, a tenth of a second against Calgary or holding on to the Arizona lead, and you're in the Calgary series right now, and by the way, Dallas is up 2-1 in that series. That hurts to think about if you're a Preds fan. But you've got that aspect of it where I think in a lot of ways this Predators team overachieved in the regular season. And then you have the way that the season has played out the last couple of weeks where you got Duchesne scoring 43 goals, Forsberg at 42. Roman Josi had the best offensive season a defenseman has had in the last 30 years. And your goaltender finished with a .918 save percentage in the regular season, which is pretty darn good. Ryan Johansson played well. Mikael Granlund played well. Tanner Janot led all rookies in goals. All these things happened, and it was good enough to get you the number 8 seed and potentially swept in the first round. What do you do with that? Like, it's a really weird spot for the Predators to be in.
Yeah, well, I think if most people can agree that they overachieved, and most would, and overachieving is squeaking into the playoffs as the 8 seed, then that probably tells you that, you know, you've got to – I mean, you're not where you want to be. You know, I think you can – if you want to sunshine this up, you can by looking at the youth of the team and looking at some of the young players in the pipeline and looking at a Tomasino and Janot and saying, okay, but as those guys grow and get better, what does that mean? And I think they can. But you're talking about competing at the highest level. Right? I mean, it's not satisfactory anymore to just make the playoffs year after year.
No.
Great job. Eight straight years. I mean, only Pittsburgh has a better streak right now in the league. There's something to be said for that, for sure. That consistency. And look, this season, how many times did we talk during the season about how this is the most fun team to watch in a long time? It is. It's the most fun team to watch. It has been, or was, since the President's Trophy team of 17-18. But ultimately, you know, they faded. They and their weaknesses and cracks have been exposed. And I just, you know, this is where I don't know the answer. I mean, I know some people, and some people now are saying, I've been saying all year, blow it up, just blow it up. I'm not necessarily on board with that, but I also don't know that this core is going to get you where you want to get without some serious reinforcements. And I'm talking, you know, like top six forwards who are among your best forwards. So how do you make that happen? And by the way, is number 9 going to be a part of your future?
Yeah,
or not?
I mean, that's such a big question. I know that, you know, we talked about it. Forsberg's not been good in this series. And, you know, I heard from some Predators fans on after the game Saturday night, well, just let him walk. You know, you don't need him anymore.
Yeah, he stinks.
Well,
clearly he stinks, everybody.
I understand that it's not been good for him in the playoffs. If you lose him, you're going in a pretty different direction as a team. And, you know, I guess unless your backup plan is going to get Johnny Gaudreau, which you could pick things right up and go from there.
But Hines loves those little quick forwards. He's a big fan.
Poyle loves those American college guys too. So maybe it's a match made in heaven with Johnny Gaudreau coming here to Nashville. But it's the other part of this, obviously the Forsberg contract situation, that's going to play very heavily into this conversation. But the other part of this is, even if he's back, like, how much can you realistically expect him to put up 40 goals, Duchesne to put up 40 goals, and Josi to have 96 points? Like, is that ever going to happen again? It's difficult for me to believe that. I mean, I understand that the NHL, I don't know what's going on this year in the NHL. You know,
the
juice ball era in the NHL. Even in the playoffs, you see typically scoring goes down, and that's not happening in the playoffs. Every game, it feels like, is a blowout. Now, there are obviously a lot better series going on than the Predators and the Avalanche right now. The close games have been at a premium
so far. It is weird.
It's really weird. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that I like it, because a lot of these games have been over with by the time third period rolls around.
Rangers-Penguins have been good, though.
Yeah, they've been really good. But it's one of those things where, like, can you really expect Matt Duchene to produce at this level again? Can you really expect Roman Josi, as good as he is, and I don't think Roman Josi is getting worse anytime soon, can you expect him to produce at this level, a level we've not seen in 30 years from any NHL defenseman? Can he do this again? I don't know. I mean, that's part of what makes this team and this kind of window right now so confusing, is because all these guys were great this year. Like, we've been trying to find a 40-goal scorer around here for the entire history of the franchise. They got two of them this year. You had a defenseman almost score 100 points this year, and you were the 8th seed. Like, what does all that mean? It's a difficult spot, honestly, for David Poile to be in, because let's say you keep things as they are. You're relying on some young guys to come up next year. They do have a ton of cap space to work with this offseason, even if they do sign Forsberg. So maybe you have an addition there. But let's just say Tomasino grows into a different role. You got Afanasyev maybe coming up next year. You do have basically two first-round picks from last year, too. We'll see how they factor in as they come down the stretch. But what if Forsberg regresses? What if Duchene regresses? What does that mean? Does that mean you're out of the playoffs? I think it could. It's a weird spot to be in.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a tough spot. And you know, you could make the case. You could make the case of looking at it like a full rebuild, but then what does that mean? I mean, you know, are you just gonna have a fire sale? I don't see that happening. You know, I think it's obviously very important. You know, people have to remember, the NHL isn't the NFL, you know. Like, it's important to make the playoffs. It's important financially to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the Preds are probably going to have two games. That can't be too much of a bonus. But big picture, like, it matters. Like, their ownership, you know, of NHL teams, it's important to get in there and get that revenue. But for the fan base, if you just feel like you're just kind of treading water and just trying to squeak in year after year, you're going to lose interest. You're going to lose some people. I think we saw some of that Saturday.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators. What do you make of the state of this team as they head into Game 4 tonight, taking on the Colorado Avalanche? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, intern Nick Kieser, Ladarius Robinson here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a full house here today on the program. Taking your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So we're throwing this question out there, bouncing this around a little bit. Preds are down 0-3 to Colorado. A lot of ways they overachieved this season, and it's come to a screeching halt. We'll see if they can get it done tonight in Game 4 and extend the series. What does all this mean for the trajectory of the franchise, for the direction of this team? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Got a texture that says, it means the rest of the team's not very good. The Duchene line is one of four lines. The other three have to contribute. I mean, to that end there, I mean, obviously, the thing that we keep talking about that really sticks out like a sore thumb right now, the top six. I mean, outside of Duchene, Johansson, Granlund, and Forsberg, those other two spots, you just don't have anybody right now. Luke Cunningham is not a top six forward. And, you know, Adam Vingan asked John Hines about that after Game 3. And, you know, Hines went into an answer about him bringing a lot to the table outside of the scoring that his teammates trust. And I understand that, and I don't discount that. But if you're going to be in the top six, you need to be able to score. And Luke Cunningham can't do it. Eli Tolvanen, I know he got a goal the other night. Nice shot by Eli Tolvanen in Game 3. I think it's fair to say he has underachieved this year based on preseason expectation. I mean, heading into this series, what, he was scratched in Game 1? He was scratched in 3 out of the 4 games after Game 1. So it's one of those things where top 6-wise, you've got to find somebody that can fit there. Now, maybe that's Tomasino as they move forward. I've been, I think, steadily encouraged by the way that he's played. You know, obviously he's not been much of a factor in these playoffs. By the way, they did bring up Cody Glass in Game 3 as well. We'll see what his future looks like. So there's some intriguing young guys that they have. But right now, I look at the team and I say, okay, well, how long is it going to take the young guys to get there and to come along? And when they do, what's it going to look like from the older guys? Like, Duchesne's not getting any younger, right? Johansson's 29. He'll be 30 coming up in August. Forsberg, depending on what happens with him, he'll be 28. I mean, Yossi's 31. He's not getting any younger either. Ekholm. You can go down the list. Granlund, he's on that list too. So, do the Predators have enough time to bring these young guys along while still having their big money guys be productive players? That's why, to me, Joe, this is so difficult, is because, number one, I don't know if you can expect these top guys to have this type of season again as they move forward. And number two, even if it's a small drop-off, you'll probably take that if you're the Predators. But are the young guys, are they helping you out quick enough to maximize this where you can actually be competitive? Because a lot of times that's really difficult to time up that way.
Yeah, and then are you even good enough then? I mean, yeah. Even if they, let's say that they do continue to play at a pretty good level, similar level, you know, and how long does it take? And then how good are they? Like, I agree, Tomasino encouraging. Is he going to be a great player? I think he's going to be a good player. I think he's trending toward being like a guy that could be in a good team's top six. But again, I mean, I'm looking at the Avalanche and some of these other teams in this postseason. And they have their highest level is a higher level. One thing that a lot of people are saying on the text line, Adam in Hendersonville is a Canes fan, says, outside looking in, they're not a contender, they need youth and speed. A lot of people are talking speed, which is interesting to me because I do think back to a few years ago, I thought it seemed to me, especially someone putting fresh eyes on the franchise, that David Poile was a GM who was really emphasizing speed.
Yep.
And maybe de-emphasizing size with this team a little bit. And obviously, this reset that kind of goes back to the 1920 season, firing Laviolette, hiring Hines, has been much more, okay, get big and heavy and play that way now. And so now I do think that in some of these games recently and in this series in general, they have definitely looked slow relative to their competition. Now, is that because they are slow? Is it just the state of the team right now? I don't know.
Well, look, they've looked slow in this series at times. I don't think there's any question about that. Number one, I didn't think they looked slow on Saturday in Game 3. I thought they kept up with them just fine. And the other part of this is they've looked slow, but they've looked slow especially when it's Nathan MacKinnon on the other side and it's Cale Makar on the other side. Like, those are the two guys that you really look slow against. And, I mean, I understand it. You got to play those guys, but most people look slow against Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar. So I don't think the Predators are as slow of a team as maybe some people have thrown out there the last couple of weeks. There's an underrated part of this that, you know, I don't think a lot of people are talking about that Ethan from Lawrenceburg brings up on the text line. That I think is a great point. Says, I'm not sure that Favreau or Carrier are top four defensemen. I have not been impressed with those two guys coming down the stretch. And I know, you know, Ekholm's had moments where it's been rough. You know, Yossi's made some, I think, misreads where he's tried to go maybe pinch up a little too much, and he's gotten caught going the other way. But Favreau, he just kind of seems like a guy out there. Carrier, I don't think he's been very good in this series. And, again, it's Colorado. I understand all that. But I just don't know, moving forward, if those two guys are going to be what you need defensively in the top four role. I mean, I think Carrier, for the most part, had a pretty good year. Favreau's just been so up and down. I thought he started the year really good, and then he got hurt, and then he came back, and it just wasn't quite the same. And I think there's been some games where he's looked good. I think there's been some other games where it's been pretty brutal out there. And there's just still a lot of inconsistency in his game, and I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, you look at how they got to the Cup Final a few years ago. They didn't have an elite forward group then either. Now, they had elite goaltending.
They had the best decor in the league.
That's – I mean, think back to 2017. Ekholm and Subban, they played as well together as maybe any D-Corps that I've ever seen come through here. And that's saying a lot because there have been some pretty darn good D-Corps that have come through here. Like, it's just
– Yossi Ellis.
And Yossi Ellis. I mean, it's just not the same right now. And I'm not saying that that's all of it because there's a lot of different things that factor in here. But that's a part of it where you can talk about the top six, and I agree with you. It's got to get better. They're not as fast as Colorado. I think that's pretty obvious as well. But that's a part that not very many people are talking about, that I wonder how you fix that as you move forward here.
Well, yeah, and so it's a lot to address. So, you know, you have some good pieces. You have a lot of places you'd like to upgrade. It's just not that simple. So, again, some fans, and I know right now you're very emboldened. If you've been beating the drum all year, blow it up, right? We've talked about that too. There is a clear potential downside there. I mean, certainly there are teams that have gone to the bottom and have timed it up well and have gotten generational players because of it, and some of those teams are still right now in the playoffs in a very strong position.
Yep.
But it's hard to – you know, it's hard to plan for that. And again, ownership, and it's an interesting situation with the Preds. They have an ownership group. You know, you tell those people, hey, how about, you know, 2-3 years of no postseason while, you know, you're rebuilding everything, and what's their reaction?
It's probably not great.
A lot of excitement for that?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. And this is the. So this is where, you know, business interests for a franchise can very much conflict with fan interests. And, again, I'm not saying that blowing it up is the best thing anyway. But I also look at this group, what they have coming up, and I'm struggling to see a contender. Now, I also think that UC Saros is still what you start with on that, and I think there's still a lot of promise there with him. And when you have a goalie, there's a lot of teams out there who don't have that, right? Who don't have one of him. Not to mention, you know, some, you know, an Askarov in the pipeline.
Well, and look, one thing that we'll never know that is almost useless to discuss, but I'm going to bring it up here anyway. Like, what happens? What happens if you hold on for a tenth of a second longer against Calgary a couple weeks ago? What happens if you hold on to a 4-0 lead against Arizona? Dallas is up 2-1 on Calgary. They're going to try to go up 3-1 tonight.
Calgary can't score right now.
Calgary can't score right now. And, look, I get it. Dallas is down the stretch, played way better defense than the Predators did. So I'm not saying that the Predators wouldn't be down 0-3 to Calgary right now. I have no clue. But some of this is also you're taking on a team right now that very well may go on to win the Stanley Cup this year. Now, again, if you're going to be a contender, those are the teams you're going to have to play. I understand that, but – part of what of the discussion here is you really screwed this up the last couple weeks of the regular season with a chance to avoid this matchup. And, you know, I didn't think there was a huge difference between Calgary and Colorado. I think I was probably wrong about that at this point. And, you know, what would it look like if it was a different series? If you, let's say you beat Calgary in a series, how much differently do you feel about this team and the trajectory of it at that point if you're a Preds fan?
Yeah.
That's something we'll never know. But – it's obvious they don't match up against Colorado.
Well, obviously, I mean, you win a playoff series. I mean, it's been a long time. It goes back to the first round, a series you were heavily favored to win 4 years ago. It was the last time you won a playoff series. So any playoff series win is significant. Would that fundamentally change all the issues we're talking about, though?
I don't think so. I mean, look, some of this is as simple as the guys that the other team has, right? You mentioned, you know, being bad enough to find these generational guys. And the Avs found Nathan McKinnon. They found Cale Makar via trade. I mean, they were bad for a long time.
Yes.
And they got some of these guys, and now they're really good. I mean, think about Pittsburgh. That's the example we used a lot. Chicago, back in their heyday. You know, Edmonton was terrible, and then they had Leon Draisaitl on Connor McDavid. Like, that's sometimes what it takes. And the Predators, to their credit, have never been that bad. I mean, the 1 year that they were, they picked fourth and got Seth Jones, and that was the draft where it went McKinnon at one. I think it was Barkov at two, Drouin at three, and Seth Jones at four. I mean, that's the last time they've approached being that bad.
Barkov.
Yeah, it'd be pretty nice.
But at least they didn't pass on him. You know,
yeah. I mean,
it wasn't up to them.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. How do you feel about the state of this Preds franchise? 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.